Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 79 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by my co-host, Steve, and we're going to cover this week's nerd news. We're going to begin with the crazy stories surrounding AMC, Regal, National Association of Theater Owners, and Universal Studios, and bringing the streaming wars to the theater industry. And then we're going to jump over into some tech news, talk about some recent upgrades to Teslas. We've got Elon Musk going on a tweet storm this last week. And a new national emergency has been declared due to foreign hacking. All right, let's get started.
Calling back all nerds. Nerds!
Welcome back to episode 79, and let's get started with some talk on our last week.
Yeah, we got a few articles that released after we talked about it. Some responses, some other responses. It's getting interesting, the movie.
Yeah, so we'll just lead with really the biggest story this week, that if in entertainment, if you pay attention to what's going on in entertainment and movies, this has been kind of dominating, as it's been a slow trickle since really it was, I think, Tuesday of last week when AMC announced that they were no longer going to show any Universal movies. And this comes following a Universal comment. We've covered in the past that Universal released Trolls straight to video on demand. So has Disney has released Artemis Fowl or is releasing Artemis Fowl as well as another
Universal's releasing Scoob, that Scoob movie. They're releasing that straight to
Yeah, and so we're seeing other movies getting released, but the difference was that AMC did it kind of unilaterally. They didn't talk to the theater owners about it. And even at the time, AMC was kind of, or not AMC, but Universal was disingenuous. So even when they announced that they were going to do a video on demand, they were saying they were going to have a simultaneous release in the theaters and video on demand, knowing full damn well that there was no theaters were going to be open. So they did this as a test, and everybody felt it was kind of a test of the streaming capability for these kind of movies. They release it, and they announced last week that it makes $100 million. $100 million in the first 3 weeks is actually more than the first Trolls movie. There's far less of a cut that gets paid out.
That's a little deceptive. Trolls was more of a kind of cult hit. So the first movie, everyone was like, they're really making a Trolls movie, like, and nobody went and saw it. And as people did see it and recommended it, it had a better showing on Blu-ray and on cable. People fell in love with it. People watched it over and over. So the fact that it made more than the first movie, I think, is a deceiving statement. The first movie was not as expected to make as much money as it did. You know, like, it was a cult hit.
Maybe, but it still made close to the projections that they were having for this movie in the theatrical run.
There's limited amounts of kids' movies, so you project that, you know, parents will take their kids to see anything in the theater because there's only one movie a month, if that comes out that is in the animated, bring your 8-year-old and don't worry about it type movies. So they'll bring them to anything. So of course, you know, the bottom number is going to be, we expect it to make 60 million because every fucking rated G movie makes 60 million.
Well, so making 100 million in streaming where they don't have to share a significant portion of that revenue with the theaters, essentially that,
which
the
is
vast
also a deceiving number. You are never going to have another time in human history where you could release a movie and people have to watch it at home.
Right. And that's I think, so that's one of the arguments that the National Association of Theater Owners, NATO, we'll refer to them as NATO here. Just know that we're not talking about the international body at this point in time. and that's one of the arguments that NATO had. That's one of the arguments that AMC and Regal is having, but still what Universal took the fact that they were able to make $100 million here, they were able to be within 3 weeks of release, be a profitable movie. They took that and they said, hey, from this point on, this is redefining our theatrical model, that we are looking for more video on demand releases, simultaneous releases with theaters. And they did that in what AMC announced in their letter to Universal, that they did this in a unilateral way without coming to the negotiating table without the theater chainers. And AMC said, we will not play as any Universal movie in the future.
Well, to me, this is stupid on Universal's part too, because essentially that they're, so to me, this is like living in a desert and basing all your yearly water projections off of the one day it rained. You know, so it rains one day and you're like, oh, we're gonna have fucking plenty of water. Like, look at this, like 2 inches a day. Like, yeah, it rains this one day a year, pal. Like, you can't base any future projections for digital releases and profits and things like that. You cannot base any of those projections off of this window of time. We will never live in another window of time like this ever again.
Yeah, well, in the letters from the head of AMC to Universal, they specifically put, I'll just quote from it, that it talks about throughout the past 4.5 years, they've been in direct dialogue with, they list some names from Universal, and throughout that time, AMC has expressed a willingness to consider alternatives to the current viewing strategy common in our industry, where the aim of such alternatives is to improve both studio profitability and theater operator profitability. But they talk about, Universal stated that it's seeking these video on demand releases for the last 4.5 years. They've been looking changing the model.
At the same time, AMC just came out with their own streaming app this year. So I think that was in anticipation of doing something along the lines where you couldn't stream it on an Apple TV. You couldn't stream it on Roku. You couldn't stream it on a Fire Stick. Like, you would have to, if you wanted to see a newly released movie and you wanted to watch it at home, you would have to stream it through like Regal's app or AMC's app. This way, both those companies still get a portion of the profits. They still stay alive. And that's how they work the profit sharing out. So God only knows how much money AMC spent building this streaming service that they just released last year in anticipation of just being able to write a little bit of code and put the new movies in there, you know, and now Universal's, you know, backing out and be like, no, fuck you. We're just going to release it to everybody. We're going to take everybody. Fuck the streaming service. Just fucked up, man. It's fucked up.
I agree. I think Universal, so Universal never said that, you know, obviously they're going to go fully video on demand. Their ultimate goal seems like they want to do simultaneous releases to where at least the theatrical release is limited to maybe only a week or two, if not simultaneously available to premium video on demand services. And I think in the end, I think the theater industry recognizes this.
I do think that's the future. Think that's the future.
And I think they do too.
It's always been with a profit sharing model, not a exclusion model.
Right. And it has to be done. The union, the National Association of Theaters, like NATO, has to preserve their ability to kind of at least have chips at the table when these negotiations are happening. And with Universal doing this and really stating that, hey, they're going to move this direction, we all know Universal has their own app. They can do these things through Peacock. They can do these things through their own premium services, or just go straight to Amazon Prime like they did with Trolls, Apple TV, Amazon Prime, and these other services where AMC, Regal, theater owners don't get a cut of it. Somewhere along the way, NATO is going to have to come up with their own profit sharing model with their own NATO sponsored app or multiple apps. AMC, Regal, everybody has their own, but they have their own profit sharing model. Something has to exist in the video on demand space that allows the theaters to recoup some of that money they're losing from the people who are honestly like me. If they do video on demand, I'm probably never going to the theater again. If they do simultaneous release, if I can
see,
watch,
I'm total opposite. I enjoy sitting in the theater in the Dolby. Like, the only way I will stop going in the movie theater is if I spend $50,000 and put one in my basement, which I have dreams of doing. Like, let's not be. I have life goals of having a $40,000 to $50,000 my home to watch, you know, my family nights and stuff. But real, you know, if I never hit that point, one, I won't be totally mad. I'll be a little heartbroken. And two, I'll have the option of still going and sitting in a Dolby theater with the crazy ass surround sound, the best picture. And I like the shared experience. Even if I don't know these people, I go to the movies by myself to write these. My kids are sleeping. My girlfriend stays at home and I go to the movie and I enjoy sitting around the 10 to 50 people and hearing their reactions. Like, you know, when I went and saw Knives Out, people thought I didn't like the movie, you know, but people around me are laughing and enjoying themselves. And I like that kind of like, what the fuck are you watching? Kind of like mentality and, you know, the feeling like maybe I'm the weirdo that doesn't like this. And like, yeah, I like that shared experience.
I hate the shared experience. I'm all about this COVID life. And if I can live in somewhat version of quarantine for the rest of my days, but have access to things like hiking trails and being out in the outdoors, I'd be perfectly fine. I don't need to go sit around a bunch of strangers at any point in my life. So I'm perfectly fine with never going. I'm perfectly fine with never going to the theater. And if I can spend $20, you know, that's what the price of these premium video on demands were.
That'll
who
change,
knows what?
Though,
yeah, who knows I what think. That goes to?
Because essentially, but, they were, you know, you're charging $15 a ticket for the theater. So if you had a family of four, you were spending, you know,
yeah, way more than $20. Yeah,
way more than $20. So I don't understand like why they would cut that amount of profit out to give you a video on demand. Like,
yeah, and I got to keep my pain in the ass kids in their seat and not bothering other people. And no, I'd
see
just
benefits
do this
at
home.
Yeah, some of these movies, if my AMC A-list covered going to the theater and watching movies at home, there are a lot of movies where I'm just going to sit on my couch and smoke bongs the entire time. Like, yes, I cannot smoke weed in a public theater. So I see a value in being able to watch a movie at home. I do, you know, but I think it's, you know, there's a loyalty thing that the theaters have built these movie studios over 100 years. You know, without movie theaters and without the movie theater experience, Universal is not Universal. Disney is not Disney. You know, WB is not WB.
No, and the future quality of movies requires the theaters. Because, yes, Trolls can be profitable on video on demand. I still question, are you ever going to have, you know, these big budget end games and stuff like that if you don't have $1 billion release? Like if you don't
have their
ability. You
ain't making $1 billion on VOD.
No, never.
You ain't making $1 billion on VOD.
So is it really feasible for these huge movie releases, that these big staple releases that actually fund all of these other kind of losses and marginal gain movies that exist throughout the rest of their portfolio, if they can't rely on the strength of the movie theaters still being there and being viable for these staple releases, what happens to the whole industry? It probably suffers significantly.
Yeah, the
so
horror,
they need the theaters.
The horror genre basically dies. You know what I mean? Like you have a whole subset of cult followed movies that only a small fraction go out to. These movies are barely profitable, if they are profitable. Those movies just die. No one makes them anymore. You know.
But then, you know, in this story, you get, so it just wasn't just AMC that, you know, goes against Universal. AMC was definitely the boldest, came out the gates, shots fired early, and just said, we will never show a movie of yours again until you come back to the negotiating table and provide us a path to where this works for everybody. And Regal then joins and says the same thing, less strong than AMC in the sense that they didn't just outright ban every Universal movie, but they did say that they will not play any Universal movie that is also streaming on video and demand. They will not allow Universal to do simultaneous streaming. So if they don't respect the theatrical window, the exclusive theatrical window, then those movies are out. So they're doing it more on a movie by movie basis.
And I'm kind of glad to see the two of the major chains sticking together in this. Like they do realize that they are stronger if they band together, if they handle this individually. Universal also released a response statement to these them both, which seemed very arrogant and petty. like they're just like, yeah, so like, it'll be a sad day if I can't take my kids to the movie theater. Like I have so many great memories. Like I see an old movie on TV and instantly sometimes one of the first things I think of is like, oh, I've seen that movie in the theater with my grandma. You know, in the summers when Graham didn't have a lot to do to keep us occupied and stuff like that, she would just take me to a movie. And I've saw like tons of movies. I can't watch Blank Man without thinking about grandma, because the fact that I sat in the theater and watched Blank Man with my grandmother is hilarious to me in itself. So like there's a whole mess of them. And then even, you know, our father's passed away, and I remember seeing Jurassic Park in the theater with my dad. My dad barely ever got out of the house, you know, so the times that he packed us all in the car and took us to see Jurassic Park, he took us to see Terminator 2, you know, these are great memories that I have that I cherish. And I looked forward to building these memories with my children. And if we kill the movie theater, man, I'm be pissed.
Well, I blame you for the fact that Trolls was profitable since you purchased it not once, but twice.
I purchased it once. My ex-wife purchased it again. You could blame my five-year-old daughter for your daughter working the system.
Your daughter was one of the contributing factors of the collapse of the movie industry here.
They did get a theater's trip worth out of me. Like, I'm not going to lie. You know, but at the same time, I'm not telling my five-year-old she can't watch Trolls World Tour. Like, don't put me in that position, guys. Don't put me in that position because I can't fight her. Like, she's going to win that battle every time.
And that was the petty argument that, you know, Universal had, and their response was they were doing it for the children, for all the people who were sheltering at home. And they were just providing them an outlet and entertainment.
The biggest cop out in life. Think of the kids.
So that was their big big statement. It was they were just doing it for the fans, for the children, for the people who bored at home. They wanted to provide them something, and that their comments about video on demand is in line with what they said in the past. She's just a lucky spoiled shit
because daddy's got a 65-inch 4K in the living room, and it's like not that bad. You know, if she grew up like us and had a 27-inch boob tube.
She wasn't gonna be
loving Trolls World Tour at home. Like, okay, daddy's got an air popper. I popped a bunch of popcorn. I bought Raisinets and Twizzlers and everything. I did the whole movie experience at the house for her. Like, if it was us when we were kids, yeah, no, grainy, little-ass TV, us sitting on the floor, no fucking snacks. No. Like,
if it was a movie theater experience for my kids, they would just be walking to the couch with their pockets full of candy.
With some vegan chips. Yeah. You fuckers. kale slices.
We have taught our young children how to smuggle in candy and drinks into the theater.
I buy the popcorn in the pop. I put sweet tart Twizzlers in my pocket. I go half and I will give them. I will give them the fresh popcorn and the large cherry Coke. I am taking my own words.
All right. Well, either way, I think this is a fascinating kind of story and direction that the theater industry is going. It is the natural progression of things. Video on demand, being widely released to people. The 3 month wait for people to be able to watch it at home for these
movies. Someone needs to make a 2020 remix of Video Killed the Radio Star. Video's going to kill the movie star.
But I mean, video on demand, it is definitely the future. And
well, like, what happens with the contracts like with Scarlett Johansson and Robert Downey, where they get 1% of opening day sales? Like, that's a big draw to get a lot of these stars for these big movies to come back, is the opening day sale cut. Well, if there is a minimal or no opening day, the fuck happens to these paychecks? And now how hard is it to release these movies and make these movies?
This is why I think the future is more of a scaled video on demand, that there's still the 1 to 3 week exclusive release in the theater that they can go and get the full blockbuster numbers, go get those early day releases, encourage people to go out to the theaters. And then the premier video on demand services, whether it's AMC's app or Regal's app or whatever else, they should be week, you know, two or three.
Well, that's what they do with the Blu-ray, right? You could buy a movie on demand, on video on demand, 2 weeks before the Blu-ray actually hits the stores.
Yeah, and I think that time frame just needs to open up even more. By the time these movies are 3 weeks in, unless it's Endgame or whatever else, you know, they're out now being on limited showings, limited screens.
If you hadn't gone to a theater in 3 weeks to see it, you weren't going to go. And if watching it at home is what gets you to actually watch it, then I think that's the best model to go with, is a 3 week delay. You know, so if you cared enough about this movie to where you don't want spoilers and you don't want to wait, then get off your ass and go to a theater. But if you were just like, I wouldn't mind watching the next Fast and Furious, but I'm not going to go pay and do this and do this. And then 3 weeks later it comes out and you're sitting bored on a Saturday, you might hit that buy button.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think we're seeing a very public, you know, pissing contest that's going to eventually lead to negotiation. Universal needs the theaters right now.
They're all posturing right now.
Yeah, there is no option. The second theaters start opening up, Universal is going to come back to the table and say, oh, please show my next movie. We're glad to talk to you about what's coming up next with regard to video on demand and everything.
Yeah, you notice Disney ain't trying to fuck with them theaters right now.
They announced straight video on demand for movies early in this system, and never have you heard AMC or anybody else talk about Disney or threaten Disney action on any of these. So,
but they're also not. They also push back Black Widow, and they're pushing back all their Marvel and stuff. Like, so they're not trying to poke the bear yet either.
Yeah,
Artemis Fowl is releasing a video on demand. They're like, okay, like, yeah, would you best move that Black Widow? You best move that Black Widow.
So we'll it's definitely an interesting kind of case study, but we'll see what happens in the future. But another article or news topic that's kind of in line with this is what we have seen in this time during COVID-19 is that video piracy is at its peak during COVID-19. Any surprises here? Any surprises here? This is that untold thing that's part of the streaming wars is, you know, nobody wants to pay the $5.99 subscription for everything. And with the streaming wars, these piracy services and stuff like that, you know, it's not like the bootlegs of the past with the cameras on the screens, like with these video on demand things, all these Netflix movies, all these whatever else, like, no, they're full quality because it's easy to rip these things that come to video on demand. So stuff like Trolls or whatever else that people are able to watch at home for $20, that's easy to rip and have perfectly clean quality on these services. And that's one of the, I think that's going to be a concern of the movie industry, is that when they don't have exclusive in the theater, it's going to be very hard for them to control this market, this, you know, illegal streaming.
COVID has extended the cuffing season indefinitely. Cause if you were looking to dump your boo for a nice summer of being single, you kind of postpone that to keep that Hulu password and to keep that network password.
I was so wondering where the hell you were going. I was lost for a minute. You did not
dump boo so he'd change his Netflix password on you. You're gonna ride that relationship out an extra couple COVID weeks. So COVID's cuffing season has been extended indefinitely. But yeah, that's the thing is what there's no way they could stop that piracy. I don't see a technology that's going to scramble the screen from being recorded and not from you watching it on a monitor. It's got to be fairly easy to just bootleg the shit out of these things.
Yeah, and then, you know, with the ease of, you know, you no longer have to give your computer AIDS by, you know, going to LimeWire or whatever else. I mean, you could just do it in real time, streaming from whatever your Fire Stick is and stuff like that, with extremely simple ways to kind of hack these things and go on. I don't know what the latest programs and stuff are. I haven't played in this realm of streaming, which is weird. For as cheap as I am, you would think I would cut this
digital
corner.
Yeah, I think we got a couple digital criminals in the cantina.
But it's incredibly easy to do this, and the qualities are pretty good, especially when you're talking about, you know, if you just don't want to pay the Netflix subscription, but you want to watch everything on Netflix. Well, you can get Netflix quality still through the streaming services. And the tough thing was always the new movies, the new release movies were difficult to get good quality on these piracy apps and programs. Well, if they're going to be available on digital demand, that means you're going to have digital quality ripoffs as well. And it's definitely going to be a challenge. So over this COVID, so over the last 2 months, there's been a 42% increase of these sites like Popcorn Time or whatever.
That's a lot of freebies
increase in use over the last 2 months. So this is definitely gonna be
whoever's got them free Quibi links, send them over, because I'm paying for that shit and I want to watch Reno 911. I love that fucking show. It was one of my favorite fucking stoner shows. And now goddamn fucking Quibi revived Reno 911, and it's the only way to watch it. I can't do it, man.
Eight minute clips of Reno 911.
It's a perfect show because that's all the show was back in the day. It was just like a series of, you know, cops things, and they were all like maybe 4 minutes long. So you could have, it's really easy to make a Reno 911 in Quibi shorts. And I just, man, I love that whole cast. I love the whole premise of the show. And the minute Quibi put that advertisement out, like I shook my fist at the sky. I was like, no. fucking Quibi. And if you got it, send me that DC Universe link too, because I ain't paying for that motherfucker either.
Well, make sure you don't skyline yourself. Don't put it in the Facebook group or anything crazy. Let's keep this low key here. But I think this is going to be definitely a concern of the industry. And in the end, I think there's still plenty of paying people who don't want to have to worry about VPNs and hide their IPs and try to secretly watch all these.
Yeah, I ain't hating on the game. I understand it. Like, there was a time in my life where I would have bootlegged everything. You know, I've just passed that point and I'll throw the sawbuck down. Like, I don't care. Like, there's things that are just not worth the added hassle in my life right now. Yeah, I'll pay for my entertainment. I don't care. I work hard. I'm old. that torrenting and all that, that's for you youngins.
Yeah. I mean, you don't need to do even the torrenting anymore. That's the thing. So it's definitely a concern, but we definitely wanted to address that. It's 42% of you, which means that a good chance that some of you listening have been increasing
saved a nice dub.
All right. Well, now let's move over to a little bit of tech news. Not a ton in the world of tech, but one thing that we did get was there was a new update to the Tesla cars, which is now letting the Tesla cars in their cruise control mode stop at stoplights and stop signs. I feel like we were already there. I found this a weird thing.
We were kind of on our way there, but it wasn't like so much so that they could announce it. You know, like, because it'll stop if it sees a car in front of you stopping. So technically, if there was a line of cars at the stoplight, it would stop. But I think it there was a big gray area if you were the first car to have to stop at that stop line of it not picking up. So they couldn't really say like, yeah, don't go ahead, let it ride, because you'd have blown a couple reds by now, I think. You know, so but yeah, we are inching closer and closer to autonomous driving. And I will love that shit.
Like, oh, yeah. Really excited for that day. Just to gain some time in my life that I could just sit and be chauffeured by the robot.
3 extra hours a day for you know, sending work emails, for, you know, reading a book. All kinds of the possibilities are endless. Like, my Wii or my Switch would probably stay in my car. I want my car to drive myself. I want to sit in the back seat of my car. Nobody front seat.
Well, so that we get that news from Tesla this week, and that upgrade, which I'm sure a fair amount of people paid for that upgrade right away. And I saw some demos of it, and it seems pretty pretty accurate. And you know, people
that's
just
the thing.
Trusting
if they're
going to
roll it out, if
signs.
They're going to roll it out, then it's probably foolproof. I think that's why they didn't roll it out at first. I think is there were still some bugs in the system. Now they've worked out the bugs enough to where they're like, no, we're pretty confident that we're not going to get sued. So they're rolling it out.
Yeah. Well, I think that the there must have been a bug in the system with Elon this week, as he just went on a tweet storm that caused a lot of questions. One, it definitely tanked Tesla stock.
He's got Trump-esque Twitter fingers.
Oh, man. And it started with one of the craziest tweets that a CEO can send, which was that Tesla stock is overpriced, in my opinion. And that's all he put. That was enough for an 11% drop in his stock price. Because if you're the CEO of a company telling the world that you're overpriced, of course you're going to see a mass exodus.
Yeah,
I lost
$600 in cannabis stock from that same fucking scenario.
So it's that right there is absolutely nuts for a CEO to do. And I thought that he really wasn't even allowed to do these things anymore. So the FTC...
Yeah, no, they keep slapping him on the hand for doing a shit like this.
And, well, the FTC, yeah, definitely slapped him on the hand and slapped him in the pocketbook before for doing tweets like this that have huge market ramifications. And I thought they had put a requirement that somebody had to essentially like okay his tweets if they were in any way. Like I thought that was I would need to go back and relook at it. But the FTC,
I don't think that's constitutionally allowed.
Sure it is. With the FTC, when you look like you're violating trading laws and everything else, as the CEO. So he...
I mean, is it really illegal to be a bad salesman? is it really illegal to be a bad salesman? Like, you know, like if you just take out a commercial and say that my company is shit, we do horrible work, and you probably shouldn't pay me the money I charge to do this service, is anybody going to come after you? No.
Yes, like, the Federal Trade Commission will.
Is he looking in his shareholders' best interests? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Is that illegal? I guess. Like,
yes. The answer is yes.
Illegal to where they can squash your First Amendment right. Just, you know, Second Amendment or no, first. Yeah, First yeah. Amendment. You know, like tweeting is freedom. Like we go over this with Trump. Like you can say and tweet and do whatever you want. The ramifications are the ramifications. But yeah. I don't think a judge could ever say, hey, you're not allowed to hit that send button anymore. Like now I'll say what I want and I'll pay the repercussions for it.
Yeah, that's not how these things work. I mean, you can't say whatever you want when you're the CEO of a company. There are things. There are insider trading laws. There are definitely protections that, as a CEO, as you're not allowed to have a massive impact on your stock, and it violates trade rules. So he's going to get in trouble for this one. I haven't heard what the fallout is yet. I'm sure that news is going to come out today or tomorrow on what the FTC is going to do, whether they're going to fine him or put some restrictions on Tesla. But something's coming, But that wasn't the end of his tweet storm. You know, he was. I think the lockdown has just broken him.
The fact that he tanked his own stock got me to buy some Tesla stock. I was like, well, thanks, Elon. That tweet got me at the right point to buy in.
Yeah, we'll see. Let's see if he doesn't sabotage something else here in the near future. But he was just tweeting about the lockdown and regaining our freedoms and everything else. And he seemed like a man on the edge for a couple of days there.
As I check this right now, Tesla stock is already up and I made $5.
Woo!
That's hilarious.
But in the end...
He started tweeting about states' rights, you know, like releasing all the COVID people. Like he's getting quarantine crazy too. We're all going a little stir crazy, man. We're all at our wits' ends, and people are on opposite ends of the spectrum. If we weren't a polarized enough country, leave it to a virus to draw a line in the sand and get us fighting each other too. Like and Elon, he's susceptible to it all. It's crazy times, man. These are crazy times. I've contemplated keeping a journal at some point, just because, like, I don't know how I'm going to explain all this to my grandchildren, and I really would like a detailed account. I mean, everything's recorded nowadays. Everything, like, there's going to be digital archives galore for them to look up, you know, about this time in history. But when they ask me, and, you know, I've been smoking weed for 45 years at the time, I don't know how much I want to personally remember give them firsthand accounts.
I'm just going to make our grandchildren like and subscribe, give us a 5-star rating review on iTunes, and go through the back catalog of the Nerd Cantina show here. They'll go ahead and hear all of our
we have a part audio journal thoughts that we release every week. Okay, you just saved me an hour of my day.
But yeah, the only other major story that kind of caught our interest for this week in tech space was that 2 days ago, at the time of recording this, so at the end of last week, we look at May 1st, Donald Trump declared a state of a national emergency against foreign hackers that were threatening the U.S. power grid. So he's declared a state of emergency on what is our common power grid throughout the country. And this is, it kind of came out of nowhere in the sense that it wasn't linked to, at least what's publicly been stated, that, hey, there was some recent attacks, there was our power grid was threatened, or that it was affected by anybody in the recent history. So this was taken off of just some potential problems in the future, which those potential problems have been around for a long time. And he's now made this this declaration of state of emergency. And I'm curious on who this is giving power to, because any declaration of state of emergency means that he has now just given some government body power to oversee and do whatever they need to and want to improve. Hopefully it has the effect that we're able to shore up our power grids. It has been known over several years that we've got foreign actors like Russia and China that have been looking at infrastructure, that have been mapping our systems, mapping our digital infrastructure on how we manage these systems and our bulk power system. We know that our bulk power system is susceptible to you crash one and you can black out large swaths of the country because our power grid is very, very vulnerable to pretty total collapse in certain areas. So the threat, the potential threat is there. I don't know what necessitated this specific announcement.
Yeah, I mean, how, like you said, who he gives power to and all that stuff, like, really kind of matters. There's so many asshats in that administration that kind of weary about who gets this power. But at the same time, like, I'm glad that our government is taking these threats seriously. A lot of, I say this with COVID and, you know, it's the same with this power grid system. Like, we've seen how this movie plays out. You know, like, I'm always shocked that we were so unprepared with COVID, just because we've watched this movie like 8 times where the National Guard is in the streets and we're funneling humans into cages to protect them and, like, get everybody out of the city. And there's just people coughing blood in the streets and dying. And like we've seen this movie, yet we were not prepared for this movie at all. Same thing with the power grid. We've watched the movie where the Russian hacker, the Chinese hacker, hacks into, wasn't that like the fifth Die Hard? like wasn't that, I'm pretty sure this is Die Hard 5. Like, I'm pretty sure. We have these movie references of, like, worst case scenario things that could happen in our society, yet our government takes no preparation methods at all to protect us from this scenario that we've laid out for the entire world to see. So Al Qaeda, North Korea, China. Here's a good idea. here's Die Hard 5. Go ahead, try to do it in real life. Here's pandemic. Go ahead, try to do it in real life. Like, we have all these fucking things on film, and yet, like, our government just sits on their fucking thumbs, like, it's just a movie. It'll never happen. Well, guess what? I've been locked in my fucking house for 2.5 months. All right. Like, 30 million people are on unemployment. Maybe we should take these movies with a little grain of salt and say, okay, well, it's not likely that it'll happen, but just in case, maybe we put some floodgates in case these things ever happen.
That costs money. We're not going to spend any money. What?
No. We're only three trillion into COVID. Fuck it.
But this one here created a task force between the Secretary of Defense, Homeland Security, and Director of National Intelligence. So we've got three of the key players there in domestic security that are now going to work with some level of emergency powers. To hopefully if you're not going to play conspiracy theory or whatever else, this just means that those agencies will have the ability to, essentially without having to go through long acquisition processes and going through Congress or whatever else, that they can very quickly hire who they need to hire, purchase what they need to purchase in order to shore up the network securities and everything else in order to protect the infrastructure.
We're just gonna bank on John McClane fighting a fighter jet with a semi-truck. that's where we're gonna bank on as a nation.
I don't doubt that that's written.
It's written down
somewhere
in a manila folder somewhere.
It's written somewhere as a course of action for a decision for the president. There's
dirty,
there's
white
that
man in Dago T fights fighter jet and semi.
Got it. Yeah.
Oh, this fucking cunt. Oh.
Yeah, so I'm curious to hear more. I'm hoping that they do release that there's some transparency behind this that we can see. Not only, I'm curious to see if there's something that necessitated this, right? Was there a recent uptick in
Put it on the list for threats? Bill, man. Yeah. I'm going to send him an email this week for sure now. We got three.
Yeah.
Like it's at least worth the email.
Yeah, just curious on if there was a recent attack or recent threats of our power grid specifically, because that's all what this is tied to. And if not, is it really just it's taken them essentially 3 years to respond since the last kind of known attacks as we, I think 2015, 2016, maybe a little later, was the last major known threat into it. And in the end, I want to know what powers these are granting. I'm sure there's some government watchdog companies and groups out there that are really trying to figure out what does this emergency power give and who's it giving it to in order to essentially kind of make unilateral decisions in the guise of national security.
That's one of the themes that we talk about here often. And, you know, I mentioned it to you this morning that locally I have the same kind of worries is, you know, we have these instances where stuff happens and we just give blanket power to people to do what they feel is either in the best interests or in personal. Like you can't, it's hard to know people's motives, you know, but this week in the state of Illinois, which I live in, our governor just announced that we're going to have a $80 million contact tracing program enacted. So in the midst of one, we're the brokest state in the fucking country. We have no money, you know, and we're scrambling to buy ventilators and PPE and all this. There's 30 million people on unemployment. A large section of those are from the state of Illinois. We're in this national funding crisis, and then we're just going to throw $80 million at a constitution ass wiping bill that says we're as a government going to trace everywhere you go and who you come into contact with for the good of public health. Like, to me, this is scary shit. When bad shit happens, people seize power. You know, it's like a game of jacks. You know, you bounce the ball and you try to scoop up as many jacks as you can. Well, you know, they're bouncing this COVID ball and they're trying to scoop up as much liberties as they can before that ball comes back down. Like it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and I haven't seen that specific bill, but it is in tie, you know, close ties with a lot of what we've been seeing regarding the, you know, the Apple and Google teaming up together to expand Bluetooth connectivity and Bluetooth tracing so that way we can use digital tracing more readily. There's also apps and things out there trying to do these. And we've seen other countries like South Korea and China and Singapore and that have obligated these kind of apps or the cell phone companies to provide this data so that way they can go knock on doors after.
And it always blows my mind that we pick and choose what we look at other countries are doing right. So in times like these, oh, look, you know, South Korea, China, you know, all these countries that are way harsher on their freedoms than we are. Oh, look, they're doing something right in response to COVID. Like let's do what they do. Let's do what they do. But then for decades, we look at countries that have universal health care, free public schools, like all these other good ideas. And we look at them, we're like, nah, those programs are shit. These kids, they don't know how to do it right. Like it's funny that we look to these very authoritarian societies and see benefit in living how they live. But then we look at these other societies that take care of their citizens more better and do things, you know, for the public good better and say, oh, horrible ideas, horrible. Like they're shit. Like it's just so funny. That's how our government, you know, looks at the outside world. It's amazing.
Yeah. I'm not even really worried about the government. What I concern myself with is the fact that it's the general person, the general citizen is starting to open up to these concepts. You know, we've got people protesting.
Yeah, you expect it from the government. You don't expect it from, right, from Bob, your neighbor.
People protesting because they just don't want to have to wear masks in public and stuff like that, but they're not protesting or even talking about digital tracing and essentially this mass surveillance system that's going to be using your cell phones and everything else to track you and track your behaviors and to track your contacts. For some reason, like, that's not a violation of freedoms, liberties, or anything else. But, you know, having to wear a mask in public, that's where we grab our guns and we go on the steps of our state capitol buildings or whatever else. So it's weird where our focus is, and which ones are really more.
If that is really where the focus is, you know, that's what the media puts out there, that everyone's protesting for haircuts and restaurants. But I mean, that could just be the 5-10 people that they show, or the 5-10 signs that they show. You know, out of the 500 people there, I'm sure there's a good handful that are worried about government, you know, intrusion and them enacting laws that we can never roll back, and giving up freedoms. You know, it's, yeah, they love to show the MAGA hat guy, you know, bitching about not being able to get a haircut, you know, but that's, I see those as like the outlier of those, the people that are wanting to get back out of their house and protesting the government. I honestly believe a lot of people are looking at the constitutional ramifications of this. Like, just because you think it's important, you can't lock me in my house. You can't kick me off public land. You can't, like, it's, you know, where do we draw the line as a society is to what, where we give the government these powers. And especially when it comes to the electronics and the digital stuff that goes on behind the curtain that we don't get to see, like, that shit scares the Jesus out of me.
Yeah, well, I mean, I really don't want to go too deep into, I guess, the political rabbit hole here on these stuff. My bigger concerns definitely lies on this digital tracing, the digital mass surveillance, just because once you open up that can of worms, you open up that governmental level access, you can obligate cell phone companies, you know, to trace and share that information. That doesn't go away. That doesn't go away in 18 months. That'll be here to stay. Yeah. And
I mean, I signed up on the EFF and wrote that Earn It Act petition, just like you did. I got responses from every one of my senators.
Yeah,
and
same.
They were just copy and pasted emails that just were like, we're trying to save the kids.
Yeah.
Like, don't you care about sexual predators? Don't you want to stop sexual predators? We need to do this. We need to do this. And I'm just reading it like, you conniving bastards. Like, you conniving bastards. Like,
yeah. And I got the same, probably, you know, not the same emails, but the same tone, in the sense that it was like, oh, you know, we recognize that there's some people that have concerns that this is going to ruin end-to-end encryption and it's going to violate
privacy.
Yep, that was
mine. No, it was probably one blanket email.
But the people use that same privacy to exploit millions of children per year, and we need to address that. We do need to address it, but not through surveilling every single person's text message. That's a different thing.
It's scary what we allow our government to do in times of fear. It's really, really scary. And I hope we just wise up to some of these issues. Start to care. You gotta, because once it's lost, good luck getting it back. We're still trying to roll back things from the Patriot. Still, 20 years later.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Let's end it on a happy note. As we record today, it is May the 4th. So yep. Happy Star Wars Day to everybody. Hoping that you have a good day. Usually I myself try to roll on Pineapple Express, they roll the cross joint. I roll a TIE fighter joint. if you go to my Instagram, you can actually see pictures of it. I don't know if I'm going to do one this year because I'm not going to have anybody able to smoke it with me. Social fucking distancing is really kind of ruined that for me. And there was a quick something that I wanted to bring up on the show because it is interesting in my life. It's not really nerd-esque, but I am going to put it out there for the world because it is such a great scenario, and I'm going to do some investigative reporting on this. But I have neighbors about a block away, and the one guy throws this elaborate Halloween decoration up every year, and I'm talking like puts like a plywood hallway, so like the trick-or-treaters have to walk through a mini haunted house to get to his front door to get the candy. So like he spends like 2 weeks building this in his front yard, to where you walk in off the sidewalk and you have to go through this maze that he builds with 2x4s and plywood walls, and it's all scary and everything like this. Well, I guess some neighbor they got into a war with, because he didn't get to finish the maze this year. He just kind of left his decorations up and got into a small war with a neighbor. Well, his answer to that war was to leave just one skeleton couple up in his front yard all year round. And it has a sign in front of it that says, "I'm here all year, neighbor." I'm here all year, neighbor. I'm not fucking going anywhere. And I don't know if it's to get through a village ordinance loophole or if he's just that petty, which I'm hoping it's the second. He has dressed up this skeleton couple for every holiday. Every holiday. Thanksgiving, it was a pilgrim. Christmas, Christmas, it was Santa. You know, I want to say for January, it had New Year's stuff. So like a top hat and then like all New Year's out. February, it was Valentine's Day. March, it was Irish, you know, dressed like a leprechaun, you know. And right now, currently, those skeletons are Cinco de Mayo the fuck out. This dude actually went out and bought a mariachi costume to put on the skeleton and a poncho on the other skeleton. Like, to me, this is like, this is some of the most epic trolling.
Yeah, this is
like, and not like, like you see trolling on the internet all the time. This is like Amish trolling, man. Like, he's bringing it back to the old school days and just trolling the shit out of his neighbors. So I'm going to eventually, on one of these nice days, walk over there and knock on this dude's front door and tell him I have a podcast and I've officially talked about this story on the podcast and I need to let our listeners know how this started. I want the deets. I'm gonna try to bring everybody on the podcast the deets, because this is, if you love this kind of like trolling and petty stuff, I'm telling you, it's epic. I sent a couple pictures of the display to personal friends this week. I'm going to post it up in the nerdcantina.com/community for everybody to see when this show airs. And to be continued, guys. This is great. This is, I mean, not really nerdish, but I'm willing to bet that you guys are all going to love this.
All right. Well, with that said, go check out the pictures of it over at thenerdcantina.com/community or search for us over there on Facebook.
I wish I took the pictures of the other holidays. I wish so now it's to the point where I'm going to go by every month and take a picture of every different costume. Like, I wish I had the Santa one. I wish I had the pilgrim one, but I'm going to do better, guys. Like, I'm going to get my life together. I'm going to get my shit together and I'm going to start documenting this war.
All right, well, we'll end it there and say thanks for listening this week. And this week, we'll just ask that you, as always, like and subscribe. But if you can give us a rating review over on iTunes or whatever service you're using, it goes a long way towards
everybody
the audience.
Can hit up Podchaser. Doesn't matter what player you use. If you want to go over to Podchaser and give us a review, you could go.
And it's definitely greatly appreciated, and it just helps us continue to grow this community. So with all that said, thanks again, Nerds, for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
See you next week, guys.